Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility, here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
And Klockner here this morning with Legal Aid Works. Ann, it's good to have you here. Good morning.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
We were talking just off air a second ago, and you brought up some really interesting things, so we're just going to continue that conversation on air. But I was telling you that yesterday the Rappahannock Area Health District held this little noontime Zoom meeting with some of their community partners. And they basically, we were talking about the numbers and things we needed to do. And at one point, Allison Balmas John with the health district said, you know, we know you're all tired because we're tired. And it is just I look at the topics we're going to talk about today, and we've been talking about them for a year in different forms. It's just tiring, but we got to keep going.
I think that's true. I look at it like I try to compare it to other things my family has gone through over the years. The First World War, the Second World War, those all lasted for about 4 years, and people had to have recycling, and they would save string and did incredible sacrifices for 4 long years. And yeah, 18 months, this has been difficult, but I think, well, if my folks could do this, maybe I could do this. You know, it takes a tough person to last under these restrictions.
And when you think about that, I can remember my grandparents talking to me about all the things they did during World War II and just some of the sacrifices and the volunteering that they did. And you take a look at what we've been basically asked to stay apart from each other and to wear a mask. And some of us have had trouble doing even that.
Well, we're all in this together.
Yeah.
And I like the idea of doing something that helps other people. And so, yes, I am really, really done with this. It would be great for it to be over. But I'm also really inspired, especially by our staff and how plucky they are and how they're always doing the extra mile for our clients under very difficult circumstances. And you and I have talked about this before. The eviction issues that we're dealing with during the pandemic are just now being focused on by some folks, but they'd been going on for quite a while. So this just gives another spotlight to how difficult it is to find affordable housing in our community, how expensive it is to put a decent roof over your head in the Fredericksburg area, and what that does to a lot of the dynamics that we're seeing here.
It's interesting because when you talk about just the housing situation, because it was about three or four years ago that you first said to me off air one time we had finished a show, and you said, "Would you like to do?" We did some shows on just some of the gaps in the laws that needed to be changed, and then as they were changed, so you're right. Some of this stuff has been around, but we just haven't paid attention to it.
And this is what a pandemic does: is it kind of strips away some of the things that we thought we were good at or that we had protections in place, and then you say, "Well, maybe not so much," or "This is how it affects people in unequal ways."
I am guessing that your office is still closed to just the general public coming in.
It is. We've had lots of discussions about that. I am fortunate to have a staff that is very opinionated on all kinds of different topics. And so some of them want to come in and lick all the doorknobs and they just want to, you know, be back in.
Yeah.
And others are saying, "I'll never come back ever, ever, ever," and everything in between. So I figure if I come up with a plan that makes everybody vaguely irritated,
it's working. You must be right down the middle.
I'll be doing something right. Yeah.
Well, so far, and we've been doing the show now for 6 minutes or so, we've established that your staff is plucky and opinionated. So we're going to continue to try to build on those verbs as we go along this morning.
I got a million of them.
So just keep – we'll just add it up and at the end. But, boy, this is tough because – not only the aspect of meeting with people, and that's so important to what you do, but just the whole court system has just been, and it varies. It's not like certain things where kind of rules come down from the, say, for public schools, and this is what you'll do. A lot of this that you've, as we have talked over the time, the court system is a bit different.
It is, and each court has its own way of interpreting how things are. You would think that there would be one rule that all Virginia courts would follow.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha. No, not at all.
That's so surprising.
It is surprising, but it's not surprising to lawyers because we deal with that every day.
Okay.
Even pre-pandemic, you come in and you just pitch your baseball to whichever judge is there that day.
That's true.
And you hope that your pitch is going to work and that they're going to connect with the ball that you've thrown them. And that's how you practice law. So it is very much dependent on the judge. You'd like to think there's an overarching consistency in some things, and there usually are. But on something like how a judge runs his or her courtroom, whether they accept a request to have a video hearing instead of an in-person hearing, things like that, mm-hmm. very much up to a judge. So what we found in the last year is that, at least in our region, very few judges really want to do remote hearings. So that means we go to court. And even if our office is closed, our clients still need us in court, and so we show up in court. That's just how it has to be. I would say that some of our staff, the reason why they may have an interest in coming back to the office is not everyone has the luxury of a home office, a nice tranquil workspace.
Yeah.
You know, they're dealing with their kids, you know, they're dealing with the school systems and all the stuff that they have to do to educate their kids. So there's lots of factors going into whether our staff wants to come back in or not. And I don't see that happening right this second, but I think that over time, if we do it well and consider all the different things, and if the pandemic gets a little bit more under control, we will have some very eager staff members when we open up.
You mentioned it with the courts. I should have thought at one time in my life, and for a brief moment, and I was never so happy to get taken off of it, I was the cameras in the courtroom coordinator for Stafford County Courts. And that was just...
What was that like?
I was very happy to get taken off of it because it did. It varied from court to court. So right. Some were just like, sure... Here's what you need to do. Here's what you need to tell other. I was for radio stations, and it was so difficult because it seemed like everybody had a different. Some were just no. Others were well, think about it. And you're right. There was nothing uniform.
About maybe 2 years ago, there was an issue about cell phones in the courthouse, and if you think that through. You know, everyone has a cell phone, but judges hate cell phones.
Yeah.
Because they go off, they ring, they are distracting, they're, you know, whatever. And you can also text your witness up on the stand. I mean, all kinds
yes.
of silliness can happen with a cell phone in the mm-hmm. courtroom. So typically, judges have just said a nice, clear, easy-to-administer ban. No cell phones. In fact, our attorneys oftentimes just put their cell phones in their cars
yeah.
and just leave them there. But when you think about it from a low-income person's point of view, they may not have a car. They may have come to the court on the Fred bus or whatever.
Yeah.
So where are they going to put their phone?
Right.
And that phone is what they need to call their ride when they get out. Or, you know, that's their...
yeah.
way to communicate in an emergency.
I never even thought about that.
Right. in Richmond, they did an article in the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and they actually showed photographs of people. What they would do is they would come to court. The deputy at the screening would say, oh, you can't bring that cell phone in. And so they would go outside and hide them in the bushes. I mean, it was ridiculous. It was just ridiculous.
But you bring up those points because I know, and I mean, and it, so did it get, has that gotten changed?
So,
because Spotsylvania always, I mean, I knew whenever I had to go to court in Spotsylvania,
right,
leave it in the car.
So the Supreme Court of Virginia said, okay, look, here's a model rule that courts can consider, saying here's how you can let cell phones in or not in or whatever. And they left it up to the individual judges.
Okay.
So we sent out the model rule to all the judges in our community and said, could you please consider this? Stafford has lockers now where you go and you put your cell phone in a locker as you come in.
Yeah.
Other courts just say, nope, sorry, can't do it. Don't bring it in. Others say, okay, it's all right if you turn it completely off, not even to silent. So it's just another illustration of an issue that tried to have a statewide approach, and it just went down to individual judges. And then some of the judges said, it's not even up to me. The person who handles security in our courthouse is the sheriff. So you need to talk to the sheriff.
Huh.
So it's complicated,
is
really what the issue is.
I don't know how we got off on all of this, but that was an interesting discussion. It always is with you. Ann Klockner is here with Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org. The website, we'll get back and talk about a number of interesting things that are going on right now. And we'll do that when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA.
This is Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving for daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Miss an episode of Town Talk? No problem. Just subscribe to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Ann Klockner is here this morning with Legal Aid Works. The child tax credit, Ann, has been a big story, and that is now in place, right? Because about a month ago or so that started.
Yeah, and it's a pretty remarkable thing. First of all, it's called an advance child tax credit because it's kind of giving you an advance on the child tax credit you would get next year. But they said, let's not wait until next year. So it started on July 15th. You should be getting, or if you might have already gotten a letter from the IRS, and that's going out to 36 million Americans. So that's a lot of people who could be eligible to receive a monthly tax credit payment starting in July. That would be great for a lot of the families who've been struggling during COVID. The letters go out to people who were probably eligible based on information they included either in their 2019 or their 2020 taxes. So you don't apply. The IRS kind of lets you know that you qualify based on what you filed in the last 2 years. If you didn't file a tax return, some people who are, they call them non-filers, and that's because they have such low income that they really are not required to file taxes. But they had a process last year where it was called a non-filer tool, and you could go online and just register that you were low income and that you weren't filing your taxes. So if you got anything last year about non-filing, that probably qualifies you. And if you're low income on your 2019 or 2020 tax returns, you could get that. The IRS has a special page just devoted to the advanced child tax credits.
Okay.
And that's irs.gov/child tax credit 2021. So it would be a good thing to just get on there, see what they say about eligibility. There's an eligibility tool there that's interactive. You can kind of walk yourself through it to determine if you're eligible. There's even a child tax credit update portal that's just going to say, okay, if I'm eligible, can I check the status of my payment, update my information if I need to, And so most people are saying, well, what do I need to do to get this? Really nothing.
So like you said, you just...
If you filed your taxes in 2019 or 2020 and you are eligible, they will put you on the list to get those tax payments. The big question that most people ask when they're low income is, can a creditor take my payments if I owe money to somebody? And no, Virginia passed a law that said that they're protecting these payments against creditors. So if you owe money to somebody else, like a credit card debt or something like that, that won't be touched. And somebody asked us once, well, will that affect me on my eligibility for food stamps? No, they will not consider that. That is all completely outside.
This isn't going to go into your income kind of.
Correct. It's not going to be counted as income. That's right. That's right. So it's really designed for low-income folks to give them a little bit of help during the pandemic if they have kids.
You know, this is, it sounds like that the child tax credit is, or at least the information page that is there, like when the refunds, when the government was sending out the refunds, I remember we talked about it, and there was a page that gave you all kinds of information and how you could check on it and things like that.
Right. And so if you're at all curious about it, if you want to know more about it, it's irs.gov/childtaxcredit2021.
IRS.gov, child tax credit, 2021.
Yep.
And it sounds like, and you'd said that in a lot of cases, if you haven't had made enough money to file, that's one thing. But if you haven't for some reason filed and then you have fallen through the cracks, go back and file those taxes from those years so you can become eligible for this.
Right. And you can do an e-filing of your taxes for free. You don't need to spend lots of money to go to H&R Block or any other tax preparer. So they will give you a link on that website to how you can e-file your IRS taxes for free. And it's at irs.gov. Don't feel like you have to spend money to get that done. You and I both know how wonderful the United Way is here in this community, and they do a lot of help for people with their tax preparing program. Mm-hmm. So if you're in a situation where you really want to figure out how do I get my taxes filed, I would start with calling the United Way because they probably can put you right in touch with the right link to go to e-file your taxes for free.
Yeah, and once you do that, not only do you get that taken care of, you'll get into the system for the child tax credit.
It's a good thing all the way around.
It's these kinds of things, Ann, that the Legal Aid Works does. And if people aren't aware of what you do, talk a little bit about it. And I know you've got a great website that can give you all kinds of information, and if you're so inclined, you can also help what you do with donations.
We are a private nonprofit, so that means that we exist simply because we see a problem out there in the community and we wanted to meet it. We've been around since 1973, and we represent people who can't afford a lawyer when they have a civil legal problem. There's no right to a free lawyer when you're low income and you have a civil legal problem. Only if you're being faced with a criminal case would you have an attorney appointed for you. So that means people are trying to figure out their legal rights in very important areas of their life where they're about to be homeless because they're being evicted or foreclosed on, or they're losing their children to a custody dispute, or they really need child support, or they have a civil protective order that they need to get help to obtain. So there's all kinds of those civil legal issues that we help with: housing, consumer issues, public benefits, family law, things like that. And we've been doing that again since 1973. We have three offices, one in Fredericksburg, one in Culpeper, one in Tappahannock, and we cover 17 counties. We just have now, we have seven lawyers, and that is spreading us pretty thin. So we always are available for donations. If you want to donate, just go to legalaidworks.org and click on the donate button.
A lot of tough decisions you have to make, just because if you had 27 lawyers, it would be tough. But in this case, all the And I only know a few of them, but everybody is so talented and just so committed to helping people.
Put that down on your list of adjectives and to describe. They're very committed. They're very dedicated. They're tough and tenacious. And they really enjoy helping people in the middle of very difficult circumstances. So they enjoy a challenge. They're creative. They like to solve problems. I think that's the real common denominator. We've got lots of different people with different personalities, but they all are problem solvers.
Well, in so many cases that you're dealing with, they have to be problem solvers and even come up with ideas and really be able to figure out how to get from here to there.
Do you remember that old show MacGyver?
Yeah.
So the whole point was he could, like, create a thermonuclear device with, you know, whiteout and
paper
dental floss, right?
Yes.
Right, or something like that.
Yeah.
So that's, we kind of practice MacGyver law. So
yeah,
we don't have a lot of resources, but we pull all together and we make some very creative solutions out of very little resources.
LegalAidWorks.org. And Klockner's here, the executive director of Legal Aid Works. When we come back, we're going to talk about the eviction moratorium and what all that means on News Talk 1230 WFVA. That's where you're at, and it's now 8:30.
Done right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station.
ABC News, I'm Tom Rivers.
Welcome back to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility. Here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. You can weigh in about today's Town Talk topic on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, your host, Ted Schubel.
And Klockner here this morning with Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org. We have talked over and over again about the moratorium and the CDC eviction moratorium. That has changed since we last talked, I believe.
It sure has. So the last time we talked, it had been extended and extended and extended. And in fact, it was going to be extended through October. And I want to pull back a little bit and explain that the CDC moratorium was not really a moratorium. I think a lot of people thought of it as an eviction ban.
Yeah.
But evictions were going on left and right all during this entire time since the eviction moratorium was set last year.
You told me about the numbers in Spotsylvania one morning was astounding.
Was in the high 80s.
Yeah.
So that's not much of a moratorium.
Right.
Because of a bunch of things, but mostly because it only affected non-payment of rent. So if there were other issues that a landlord wanted to evict somebody for, they could definitely file mm-hmm. for. But landlords were filing anyway, and then it was just up to a judge to decide whether they felt like it applied through the moratorium or not. And there were lots of different opinions about that. But at the end of August, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that the CDC moratorium was unconstitutional. They put a period at the end of the sentence. That's done. It's not going to be resuscitated in the form it was in. It might come up later on some other way, but it did not allow the moratorium to continue in the form it was in through October, like we were hoping.
Mm-hmm.
It just stopped. So right now, there is no CDC moratorium. As I said, that doesn't mean much because it was still allowing evictions to continue. But the good news is there are still some very new rules that the Virginia General Assembly put in place that really do give tenants and landlords some help in dealing with this crisis. So before a landlord can evict now, a Virginia landlord has to give tenants information about the rent relief program. There's a big pot of money that's available that will pay the landlord and keep the landlord whole and have all that back rent paid.
Okay.
And it will keep the tenant housed during this pandemic, which is such an important part of our health landscape. So the landlords have to give the tenants information about the rent relief program. They have to apply for rent assistance on the tenant's behalf, and they have to wait 45 days for the rental assistance application to get approved. And so that is what they have to do before they can even file for eviction. They can't just say, you haven't paid your rent and I'm marching into court. They have to give you that notice. The rent relief, I want to remind everyone, is available for back rent from April of 2020 until now. You can get up to 18 months of rent relief, and you even can have three of those months be proactive and ahead of time. So that means you can have 3 months of rent paid in advance. It is very much an up and running program. There is a portal that you can apply through, or you can contact our housing navigator at Legal Aid Works. That's Rose Martinez. You saw her here in our last show that we did.
Yeah.
If you want help applying for that rent relief program, you can get in touch with her. But I would first say that if you're interested and you think, should I apply? Am I eligible? Go to the website to see if you're eligible, and that's dhcd.virginia.gov/eligibility. So that's dhcd.virginia.gov/eligibility.
These all seem like really good. These seem really solid, and they would be helpful.
Absolutely. So one of the things that people have been saying over this entire pandemic is just, it wasn't anything I could do to avoid this. My job just ended abruptly. Yeah. And I looked for similar jobs and they all were not hiring. And so I fell behind. And this is an opportunity for people to get ahead, to not have to worry about their rent, and for landlords to have their bills paid, because it's not just one part of the equation here. Landlords are not taking in rent just for the heck of it. They need it to pay their mortgages or their upkeep or their taxes or whatever. And so it's really important that this is a program that helps both sides of the housing equation.
Because like you said, the pandemic came so suddenly, and for so many people, things have in a lot of cases have gotten better. But boy, initially, it was touch and go for a lot of people for a long time.
Yeah, and it was not only a surprise, but it also was something that had ripple effects. So it wasn't just, oh, my individual job stopped. It was daycare stopped, or the schools went virtual, or whatever.
Yeah.
So there were a whole bunch of other things happening, or my mother got really sick, and so I had to stay home and take care of her because none of the nursing homes were accepting patients. And, you know, so it was lots and lots of different factors came into play to make it really, it wasn't just, oh, I'll just go out and get another job. It just wasn't possible to do that.
These have been tough times, and I mean, I know these issues have not been new to you at all. And in a lot of ways, you all, Legal Aid Works, you were ready to kind of spring into action and be able to educate legislators and the public about some of these issues, because you see them and you deal with them all the time.
And we've really appreciated it when legislators reach out to us and other people in the legal aid community, because we have been on the ground on this and seeing the kind of things that work and the kind of things that don't work. So we're able to give some real world perspective on, well, if you tweak this law and you say it this way, or you add this provision, this is what the consequence of that is going to be. So we like to be a part of this community and let people know what our expertise is and how it works and how it interplays with reality. I think a lot of times you hear about a law and you don't really understand how it works on the ground. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it works exactly as you want, and sometimes it has unintended consequences. And so that's one of the things we have expertise in, is how does this actually work for the people who are the most vulnerable in our communities?
Well, and I know a lot of people, especially with evictions and having to deal with this, they'd never dealt with these kind of issues before. They may have been living paycheck to paycheck, but this was just not something that they'd had to deal with.
Right. And so what that means is you don't have information. You don't have a knowledge base. You don't say, oh, I know all about this. This happened to my father, or this happened to my uncle or my cousin or whatever.
Because your first question is, who do I go to?
Right. And can they do that? That's the question I think most people ask us when they have a legal question is that right? Can they do that?
Yeah.
Can the landlord actually just do this or that? And so we're the ones who can answer that question and say, you know, yes or no or maybe. But I think if you've never experienced something like this, the most important thing is to get solid information.
And that's funny you say that, because I can remember doing pre-pandemic, doing some of these shows and you talking about these real life situations. And I think I would say to you over and over, can they do that?
Right.
And there is that kind of thing. And I think something like you say, a pandemic kind of shines light on some of these things, and some of these things that I'm sure that you had been talking about for years and didn't get probably much. People weren't receptive, lawmakers, to hearing about it. All of a sudden, you start seeing some of these gaps.
Well, I think that in the last year and a half, I've never seen changes in the law like I've seen changes in the housing law in Virginia. It's just been an unbelievable series of new laws. We keep on putting new fact sheets on our website, and we sometimes run behind on that because the laws change so quickly. The best source that I have found actually is the Virginia Poverty Law Center. They do a wonderful job of keeping up to date. I just was pulling some information off their website the other day, and it said August 31st, 2021. I was like, wow, that's pretty recent.
That's pretty new, yeah.
So it's vplc.org, Virginia Poverty Law Center, vplc.org. And they have a kind of COVID-19 pandemic button. You press that, and it's all the different areas of law in poverty law, so housing, consumer, family law, all of those are going to give you information and places to go. They have lots of good hotlines, information at your fingertips.
You mentioned a second ago about Rose Martinez, the housing navigator, and she was in the last show, brought her in the last show. She's really that, to have somebody like that in your office to do that kind of thing and have as kind of a point person. I don't know that we can emphasize how important and really how big that is for this community.
Sure. So what Rose does is she helps people apply for the rent relief program. She doesn't do anything else. She has a very laser focus on making sure that Virginians get access to these millions and millions of federal dollars that have been set aside to help people stay housed. And so she can be contacted at rmartinez@legalaidworks.org. You can talk to her about whether you're eligible for that back rent, how you can apply, what kind of documents you need. She has a portable scanner and printer and laptop. She'll come to your house. Mm-hmm. She will handle all the documents. She'll put them in the portal. She'll make sure that you have the best application you possibly can have, because speed is important when you're dealing with an eviction case. And if the landlord has scheduled an eviction case for 3 weeks from now, you don't want to have screwed up that application. You want to have something so that when you walk into court, you can say, here's my application, here's the status, and ideally, here's the payment to the landlord.
To have somebody like that in this community, though, is pretty special, because a lot of areas wouldn't have somebody so accessible And for you all to have somebody right in the office to be able to do this is exciting.
She fills a gap, and the gap is that we're lawyers. You know, we sue people. That's what we do.
Yeah.
Or we help people who are being sued. And she's somebody who can help you avoid that from the beginning. And not even be in that situation. Or once you found yourself in that, there's only so much we can do to prevent an eviction. And so it's really important for somebody to be the helper who can just very patiently pull together all the documents, make sure that you've got everything filled out, make sure that the landlord's documents are in order because the landlord needs to provide some information as well. So she's our secret weapon and how we're able to not only help people who are facing evictions, but also help people just access this help, because I think it benefits both tenants and landlords.
Well, you found out that you were getting a grant to be able to have her in the office, to have this position. That had to be one of those kind of days that you dream about.
Oh, it was just extraordinary. And we really lucked into Rose, too, because she is bilingual. She's been just really a quick study. She's kind of gotten up to speed very quickly to figure things out. We still have two open positions for housing navigators. So if somebody thinks they'd be interested in doing that, we have one in the Culpeper region and we have one in the Tappahannock region that we're still trying to fill. And it's a short-term job. It isn't for forever. But it also is something that we're really hoping to get somebody who's bilingual and who is somebody who loves going out into the community and helping.
Sheena, we were doing a video, and you'll be able I'll repost that on our Facebook page this weekend. And afterwards, I remember there was somebody, and I think he was coming to your office and wanted to come to the office because he went to the door and it was locked. After we finished, he got talking with her, and she was showing him some things. And I was thinking that I'm sure that's a lot of times what her day is like, of where you just run into people, and all of a sudden they've got a story and they've got a need.
And she also really takes the outreach piece very seriously. She will go to a food pantry, and when people are waiting in line for their food, she will hand them brochures. She goes where the people and the need is, and she'll go and knock on apartment house doors, and she'll do whatever she can. So if anyone here who's listening today has an idea of where she can go to educate people about this and do outreach and tell people about this program, about rent relief, she is wide open for that. Her email is rmartinez@legalaidworks.org.
Ann Klockner here with Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org. The website, more on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We will conclude when we come back. It's 8:51.
Opinions, we've all got them. And we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk, brought to you by EV Mobility, here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
And Klockner here with Legal Aid Works, legalaidworks.org, to find out about what they do, or if you'd like to become a donor to what they do, legalaidworks.org. If you lost income and are sued for unpaid rent, what can I do there, Ann?
Are going to be given a piece of paper called an unlawful detainer. That's what we call an eviction case. So if you get that and you're facing that, you can ask the court for a 60-day continuance.
Okay.
That means a delay. It doesn't make the case go away. It doesn't mean you don't owe rent. That meter is still ticking, but it gives you 60 days to get a plan together, either applying for rent relief or finding a different place to live or anything like that. It is only available, though, this has been all through the pandemic that this 60-day delay has been in place. It ends at the end of this month. It ends September 28th because that's 90 days after the date of the state of emergency ended.
Okay.
So If you've lost income and you're facing that eviction between now and September 28th, you show up at the first hearing. It's called the first return date. You have to be there that day to exercise this right. And then you say, okay, I have written proof that I've lost income, like a pay stub or a furlough notification letter, anything that just shows that you've lost income. And you ask the judge for the 60-day continuance, and the judge will grant you that 60 days. Again, won't make it go away. It just gives you that important, essential time to maybe apply for rent relief, maybe find a new place to live so that you won't have to be suddenly out on the street.
LegalAidWorks.org, again, is the website. Jazz for Justice taking place this November?
It absolutely is. So every year we do a fundraiser with University of Mary Washington. 50% of the proceeds go to us. 50% of the proceeds go to their Jazz Student Scholarship Fund. So it's a wonderful, joyous event. We've been doing it now for 8 years. And last year was virtual. And we actually had a lot of fun with it last year.
It was very fun. I watched it.
Yeah. And what I liked about it was that there were student interviews, and we never get a chance to do that during the live program. So we really got a chance to hear the students and what this was all about for them. This year, we are going to make a choice about whether it's going to be virtual or not. And we're probably going to make that choice next week. Just so that we have 2 months to prepare one way or the other.
Yeah.
If I were to guess, I would guess that it's going to be virtual again. But we're going to do a few different things and have more instruments and more fun and games on that day. But I want everyone to set aside the date, first of all. That's going to be November 6th. It's always the first Saturday in November.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to that, if you are a business leader in this community and you want to sponsor our Jazz for Justice, we have lots of different levels for you, starting at $250 for sponsorship opportunities. So please go to our website at LegalAidWorks.org. You can click on the Jazz for Justice page and find out more about sponsorship opportunities.
Again, Jazz for Justice, November 6th. It is. It's a very fun event, and I can't wait till sometime in October we'll get together with Doug Gately and others to come in here and talk about it. Just a lot of passion on both the legal side and the UMW Jazz side to all of this. It's a great fundraiser and just a lot of fun.
It really is. And it's a low price point, too. We hope that people will donate to us like they would if they were buying a ticket, and the tickets are $10 and $5 for seniors and students. So it's a great event.
Ann, thank you so much. Great information. We'll talk again soon. Thanks.
Thank you.
LegalAidWorks.org is the website, and Klockner with Legal Aid Works. Stay safe this weekend. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by EV Mobility, here to keep you moving. For daily life, travel, or just having fun, visit goevmobility.com. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. Hear Town Talk anytime by subscribing to the Town Talk podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. The Glenn Beck program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.